You can literally scatter this stuff like dust or embed it into a sheet of paper. This was commercially released 10 years ago. It's a tiny computer, and it features data processing, data storage, wireless comms, and it's probably as close to the true smart dust vision from the early DARPA days as we've come so far. They're designed to harvest energy from the environment around them and to communicate via a mesh network.
Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours.
Saturday, April 13th, 2024. Thank you for joining me today. Now, obviously, there's a lot going on right now. I was battling today with what to cover, and it's kind of what I was discussing on the last show. The 24-hour news cycle can be wildly chaotic, usually by design. But this is what we tend to kind of focus on with the daily wrap-up, is the important parts of the day. Now, today I was organizing what I was going to get to in regard to the geoengineering conversation and some other really interesting and important things that Orwell shared with me. And I decided we're going to talk about this today. My plan is to make sure we get done with this as fast as I can, and pretty hopefully fast, much faster than even the faster I usually talk about, and jump into talking about what's going on in foreign policy in a second show as soon as I'm done with this. I do find that to be important. Now, plans can change. We'll see what happens. My plan, though, is to get done and try to set up a show to discuss what's going on with Iran, because if you haven't seen it, as of right now, there's a lot flying around. Now, I want to be very, very clear. Robert put up an article today, and I'm going to put all this off until we talk about it next, that I recommend you check out. The main point of this is that obviously Iran has the legal justification. And even the legal, like if we want to use the self-defense statement, which doesn't even apply unless you're responding to an attack in real time, you can argue you have a legal right to retaliate, but self-defense is not the right term here, either for Israel or Iran, in my opinion. My point is that Iran has the legal justification under international law, and clearly according to what Israel calls self-defense, to respond here. And this is important to understand. That's not to say that I think this is what's happening right now or that it even will, but I do think that. In general, the point is, I believe Iran is going to do something. And my point was, is exactly like they've done before and what they've said, it will be strategic and will be on their time frame. Now, as Robert and I have talked about, there's different factions battling within Iran that want responses and some that realize it's not a smart thing. I think, in my opinion, it's quite self-evident to anybody that they can see that Israel and the United States are drawing this out. They're trying to get this response. They're trying to draw people in. And ask yourself, if Iran comes out and says it's going to be strategic and it's not going to be, you know, it's going to be on our time, why would then they respond in exactly the way that the U.S. and Israel have been telling you they're going to respond over the last week? Certainly possible. Maybe they're playing a game into that. But I think it's important that we're very skeptical right now. The idea of Tom Cotton and all the players have come out and said, this is coming. And usually in my experience doing this as long as I have, it's a fair statement to ask whether that could be a setup. A false flag, a manufactured event. These are not fake things, as much as people have been primed to ignore them. It's a historical context that goes all the way back to naval ships and how they would raise the wrong flag and carry out an attack in order to blame another country. It's a very classic concept, and your government knows it well. So I just want us to be very careful. Now, I've seen videos of what look like bombs, what some people say there's drones that are on the way. I can't confirm whether any of this is Iran. I've seen an Iran video that has come out from Khamenei. Doesn't seem to point to anything that says that's us doing that, but says that it's Zionist government will pay, which is what they've been saying for the last, you know, since the attack on their consulate, even before. So that being said, I just want to very caution skepticism. While we're live, things may be happening. Let me know in the chat if you want. My plan is to talk about this afterward and make sure we go over it in depth. But I want you to think about the idea of the drones in general, which is what they're telling you right now. Hundreds of drones. Israel's come out. Hagari, there is a list, has come out and said, I have confirmed this, which to me means more and more likely not real, to be quite honest, is how many times they've continued to lie. But he's come out and said there's all these drones on the way and it's going to take hours to get here. So ask yourself how they know that's happening. If this was going to be a secret attack, why it would be so transparent. Maybe they found out, Or, as Robert points out, it shouldn't take that long for these drones to get there. It doesn't really make much sense. And overall, why wouldn't Iran then change if everyone's now paying attention? I mean, none of this adds up unless to suiting the interests of U.S. and Israel, in my opinion. And even then, that very well could be something that I'm missing, that Iran is doing this on purpose to in order to draw out some other response. All that is to say at the beginning that, remember, Iran has the legal justification to respond. And that's going to be said the exact opposite. They've been building the narrative over the last couple of weeks saying, no matter what you hear, which is usually a good thing to start when raise the suspicion, Iran has been at fault no matter what. They've been behind this and X, Y, and Z, and that's all the Hamas and Houthis and Hezbollah, which are not Iran, and they just clumsily throw all that together. All of that stems back to the Israeli justification for all of it. Now, all that I think is important for you to hear because I know that's an important topic going on right now. I wanted to talk about some other things today, specifically the geoengineering experiments that I really do think are pretty important. Not that they're immediately, with at least what they claim they're doing, immediately dangerous. Not that I could, like, we'll get into why I think that's still not even, other things they're doing do include other things than salt. Let's put it that way. If you've seen the statements about salt and what they've been spraying in San Francisco. Even that, though, let's assuming it is just salt and that's all they're doing, there's a lot to discuss about why that's allowed to happen without without the voting of people in San Francisco or let alone California or anywhere in this country for that matter, or even the world. Shouldn't we all be going, hold on, you're doing something with the atmosphere that we all engage with. That shouldn't be your haphazard, secret, I'm not going to tell the population experiment when in reality it's been going on for decades, so it's not much of an experiment. I mean, it is, but it's not like this is the first time they've done it. That will bring us into a conversation of an older video from a decade ago, in fact, which is actually pretty interesting because we've talked about this a lot. Orwell shared this with me. It's a TED Talk from an Israeli scientist discussing how a Pfizer-funded project to create nanotechnology via syringe that can deliver proteins. Now, that doesn't have to be what we're talking about in COVID-19 or the COVID-19 injections, but it's kind of crazy to think about how obvious that is and how clearly that overlaps. I'll even get into some more important stuff overlaps with, guess who? Charles Lieber, Robert Langer, all the different people connected to Moderna. And it just begins almost, I don't want to say impossible, but very difficult to not be like, how is that not connected? And then on top of that, realize that these are things in general that, as we've been talking about for the last, I don't know, I mean, even before COVID-19, that have been regarded even to, I just had an interview with Allison Morrow about this, Smart Dust, that it's regarded as fake news. It's a conspiracy theory. And then, but we're talking about a 10-year-old video publicly funded by Pfizer through Israel's leading scientific location, better word for that, that is 10 years old, that is talking about nanotechnology, billions of these in a syringe that you can inject that then can create things that can stop processes in your body. I mean, it's just, obviously, this is real stuff. And then it should make you really concerned and suspicious about why people at, I'm not talking about randoms on Twitter. I'm talking about people at the highest scientists going, that's fake news. You're crazy. Pretty interesting, isn't it? So let's get into that. And then, of course, there's a couple other things that will overlap with. We're going to start with one point about climate change that seems to overlap with all of it for obvious reasons, which will bring us back to what I think is the current level of this, which is smart dust. So on that note, let's start with this point coming from the ICJ of all people. Isn't that interesting? Now, what's funny is a lot of people, and it's sort of like any of these conversations, you know, like with COVID-19, the illusion therein, a lot of people suddenly became immediate experts on vaccinology in scientific studies or any number of things. And some of us really did our due diligence and doing our best, even though it wasn't something we were super immersed in before that. So that's to say that it's not the wrong thing to do, to argue that you shouldn't do your due diligence because you're not the expert. How the hell do you think people become the experts? Like, it's a really dumb statement coming from the mainstream conversation to be like, you don't know what you're talking about. Don't even look at it. It's really, really suspicious. My point in saying all that is that it's interesting that new topics suddenly open up these doors to the average people and you find a reason to suddenly be interested in it. Like the processes of the international court, of the ICJ, the ICC, the UN in general. You know, and so my point is, the International Court of Justice is all of a sudden on everybody's mind because of Israel. And in a weird way, if you haven't paid attention, like for the UN example, for example, if you never heard about the other problems, the peacekeepers and the different, all these horrible things that the UN as a body has generally been behind, and even saying it like that, that's not really fair because It's not like just one person or group, or, but, you know, it's a shifting grouping. It's usually the international string pullers that truly have the influence over who's in those positions. And that's how you'd look at it. My point in saying that, though, is that UN as a body that, even though it fluctuates, has been behind some really horrible things, allowed some really horrible things, turned its head to really horrible things. My point in saying that is that people today may have woken up to the UN going, Israel's doing bad things, and just suddenly seen it as an altruistic entity with no question. It may seem that way if you haven't looked at anything else. So here's the ICJ, who, by the way, has stood up and been like, Israel has, it's plausible that they seem to be committing genocide. They're investigating. They said it has, the claims have merit based on all the stuff we've seen, and we know that that's true. But here's the ICJ. And again, it's just a body. So these are people that are putting this forward, and they're going to be adopting, talking about it. But something tells me this will go the way we don't want it to. Press release in the advisory proceedings on the obligations of states in respect to climate change. What an interesting thing to happen. So I don't know if this is just randomly happening at the same time as we're looking at other things. There's a lot of stuff goes through the ICJ. Or if this is an effort by somebody else to sort of slant people's opinions of what the ICJ may say. So if you have, let's say, right-wing people who are, or I mean, however you look at it, not even pulling the two-party illusion, but just people who may right now be thinking that the, you know, Israeli government is doing bad things, which they clearly are, and that the ICJ pointing it out gives them some level of credit, merit, or like, you know, the honesty. And all of a sudden you see them talking about something that those same people may think is not real or may think is being manipulated, and all it changes that perspective. That doesn't have to relate to Israel, but either way, why would they be putting forward something about climate change? And says 91 written statements have been filed in the ICJ registry, the highest number of written statements ever to have been filed in an advisory proceeding. And the point is, this is The Hague, by the way, in the advisory proceeding on the obligations of states in respect to climate change. That doesn't sound very nice. Obligations, and who gets to decide whether you're adhering to these obligations about climate change? So obviously this is about carbon tax and whatever else that they make about climate change, you know, the normal processy of a century, thousands of years. You know, the point about the idea is that climate is always changing, and the idea that carbon having, you know, it's all, I don't want to try to litigate the point of climate change in this one point. You guys know my opinions about it. I think it's an absurdly obvious manipulation, but yet we're obviously also hurting the planet, and that needs to be addressed. It's like the word of sustainability from the UN. Obviously it's something that we need to be doing. They're not actually fighting for it. It's a manipulation. But to them to say climate change, the obligations of states, obviously they're creating a mechanism here, or trying to, through the International Court of Justice, to argue that you have an obligation to the world to do certain things that we know are being politically manipulated. That's a terrifying mechanism right there, like the UN, and the, which, by the way, we should still be paying attention to, the WA, the WHO pandemic treaty. All this stuff is coming. May is coming up. Hopefully we've informed everybody enough with the tools to see what that is and how it's building. Right now, it seems like we're just holding our breath to see what they decide in May, which I wish there was more we could do to like stop that. I'm sure there is. Protest, get out there. But I mean, from sitting here and doing our work like we normally do. My point, though, is that this is definitely going to become something. And look at all the countries involved in that. The average person might be swayed by this to think that there's something going on that we need to adhere to, even though we know this is going to be used against us. Now, climate change wraps into all of this because geoengineering, they're claiming, is about climate change. I mean, for crying out loud, almost everything we could talk about, they'll tangentially connect in some backward way to climate change. And so that very much concerns me when all the things we get into, including the virus conversation or vaccines or injections or nanotechnology or smart dust, are all being employed in ways that they're claiming is about stopping this nebulous thing that we can't really define. It's cold, maybe it's hot. That's terrifying. And so keeping that in mind, and the fact that it's going through these mechanisms, let's talk about Oh, I include this as well so you can read the actual document. Let's talk about geoengineering and the experiments that have been taking place, and one that have been publicized in San Francisco. This is April 4th. This is from Scientific American. Now, obviously, the climate change aspect of this and the geoengineering aspect of this, for me, it really just opens the door to allowing people, the technocrats, to use these hyped concepts to push in their solution, which varies from moment to moment. And that's an important way to look at this, whether it's medical stuff, whether it's climate change, whether it's foreign policy. That's usually how these things work. Now, here it says geoengineering test quietly launches salt crystals into the atmosphere, which at first glance doesn't seem that crazy. Salt crystals, they seem real, you know, you would argue they're largely benign. But it comes into multiple factors for me here about whether they have a right to just do these things, not knowing the true what might actually happen, which they'll admit themselves. or that we don't even truly know if it's only salt. Why would we take their word for it? How many times have we been lied to? Right up into this moment. I mean, it's endless, guys. It's literally insurmountable at this point. So it says the nation's first outdoor test, which it's just ridiculous. Like the idea that they can actually pretend that this is the first outdoor spraying of something in the air, because that's all they're really talking about, as they'll explain. The aerosolization of particles to you, and there's a specific term, solar radiation modification, which just clearly falls under the umbrella of geoengineering and weather modification, as much as they're doing. The different terms are applied because they want this to not be as uncomfortable for those that don't like the idea of geoengineering, rightly so, and also because they've said that's fake for right up until yesterday. So it says the nation's first outdoor test to limit global warming by increasing cloud cover launched Tuesday from the deck of a decommissioned aircraft carrier in the San Francisco Bay. So global warming, right? Not like the idea that we're still even using the term global warming, which there's a point in this that will make you laugh about that. But is it not the idea that they're claiming? The reason they say climate change is because there's examples that undermine that point. Is it warming? Is it cooling? Well, it depends on which is that. So it's if you listen to the experts around this, and there's plenty that we've talked to, I often recommend, I'm blanking on the channel now. I haven't looked at it in a while. Oh, that's too bad. I'm going to often include it in here. Climate, that makes me mad. Tony Heller is his name. I'm glad I remembered that. He does good work on this. James Corbett does excellent work on this, and they will break this down for you in a very logical, consistent way, not just a little, 100-year focus, but backing up and showing you, hundreds of thousands of years and realizing that when there was no human beings and the carbon was, the point being that clearly it is not what they're telling you it is. But back to this point. Increase the cloud cover. Well, obviously, just that alone can cause all sorts of different byproducts or consequences. What if you have an area where you need lots of sunlight? I mean, we're talking about California here. Even let's just say San Francisco. What if you've got lots of crops and you depend on that sun, and suddenly they're doing this and it changes? And I understand I'm talking about not just this individual one-time thing, which is not really what this is, but the long-term argument that they're going to do this. And by the way, they already are, in a long-term, larger sense, in order to fight climate change. Okay, so what happens then when the cloud cover becomes more? Let's just say it's 10% more. Doesn't that have an effect on people that rely on the sun? Let's just say it's only 10%. Well, that means you're going to get a 10% reduction in what you need. And this is very tiny, guys. I'm just pointing out that these things have obvious, immediate real-world effects. They don't care what you think or what. This is about what they have decided is more important than your crops or whatever else will affect you, because it's climate change. And it's everybody's lie. We're all going to die. We have to do it now. Or is that the truth? Or do they even think that? The point I made about South America, where we've talked about recently, the car company that used the weather modification. It was a corporate media covered story to stop the hail from denting their cars at the plant they had, except at the same time, they stopped the rain around it, which hurt all these local farmers, and nobody cared. That's been going on for a long time. Now, it says the experiment, which organizers didn't widely announce, which in and of itself is kind of telling, isn't it? To avoid public backlash, marks the acceleration of a contentious field of research known as solar radiation modification, geoengineering. There's different, like we talked about, the stratospheric aerosol injection. These are different locations and different styles. It all falls in the same. I mean, even more so, it all falls under weather modification. But it says the concept involves shooting substances such as aerosols. So that's important, because even the more in-depth ones we'll point out next, it's clear that it's not just salt crystals. They've got parts where they're talking about aluminum. They claim that the one in Harvard that got all the attention, which was very clearly aluminum and other things, has been shut down. But again, I don't even know which. If we can clearly prove, which we can, according to every expert you can talk to, weathermen, pilots, they've been doing this for a very long time. Exactly what they're claiming they're only testing now on a regular long-term basis. I mean, we've had a couple of amazing interviews with Dane Wigington of Geoengineering Watch. And as much as just like any other group that says things that the powerful don't like, people regard him and ridiculously as some kind of conspiracy theorist. If you actually listen to him and look at his work, it's outstanding. And it's cited. He's got patents. I mean, it's unbelievably clear. But it says the concept involves shooting substances such as aerosols in the sky to reflect sunlight away from the Earth, which sounds problematic. I mean, in the smallest way, the sun is what everything needs. So what happens if you do something wrong? What happens if it goes too far? What if it causes something you can't take back? And that's all where this really goes. And guys, believe it, they even make that point in the articles. We don't really know what this will do. And the worst one for me, which we've already told you in the past, is that this exact program, when stopped, will cause it to get worse. So essentially, they're signing us up for a forever program to do this, like some kind of drug addiction for the planet. And if they stop, well, the planet goes into withdrawal. That's really what we're talking about here. And they don't care about that, even though this is not even a solution. This is a stopgap. And even then, who knows if that's even the truth? This all stems back to the hyperbolic, irrational fear that people who maybe still believe this actually think. And this is why we see kids out there making extremely irrational actions, because they think we're going to die in a couple of months. Like, that's actually the kind of fear that some of these youth have been instilled with. It's not true. Maybe not by climate change anyway. But it says the move led by researchers at the University of Washington has renewed questions about how to efficiently and ethically study promising climate technologies that could also harm communities and ecosystems in unexpected ways. Yeah, but let's test it anyway and find out what those ways are using you as the experiments. That's the whole ethical part. Don't you love the lip service? But we said we're worried about all these things while we're still doing it, though. That's just put there for you to feel like maybe they care. It says the experiment is spraying microscopic salt particles into the air, and the secrecy surrounding its timing caught even some experts off guard, because that's not okay. You don't get to just do this without telling people, even though that's pretty consistently what they usually do. We'll go over up examples like sea spray in the past. But it says, since this experiment was kept under wraps until the test started. So imagine that. Even being local experts, people that you might, this just happens around you and no one even told you until after the fact. And they go, oh yeah, we're spraying around you in the atmosphere. That just seems really crazy until you realize that, again, this is pretty much always what happens. While it complies with all current regulatory requirements, which I don't even know how that's possible. You telling me there's no regulatory requirement to inform people you're spraying? I find that impossible to believe. But it says there is a clear need to re-examine what a strong regulatory framework must look like in a world where geoengineering experimentation is happening. So all they're saying there is the current regulatory situation doesn't apply properly to what we are doing, which is probably why they were able to circumvent it. We need to sit back and re-examine the framework that lets us do this without testing or without telling people or without any kind of legal guidelines. But it says the Coastal Atmospheric Aerosol Research and Engagement, of course it's called CARE. They really care about you. The project is specially built sprayers to shoot trillions of sea salt particles. So this, again, it doesn't have to connect to the conversation we're going to get into about nanotechnology, but just remember that about one, whatever, I forget the actual metric he uses, but, you know, a drop of water containing billions or trillions of these nanobots. So just think about that in the context of what could be put out there. But this is what they're spraying, trillions of sea salt particles into the sky in an effort to increase the density, it says, and reflective capacity of marine clouds. The experiment is taking place when conditions permit atop the USS Hornet Sea Air and Space Museum in Almedia, California, and will run through the end of May, according to a weather modification form the team filed with federal regulators. Yeah, so we filled out the weather modification form for the thing that we pretend is not real, and you guys are conspiracy theorists. Like, if you ask people on Twitter right now if weather modification is real, not that ever really matters, most people will tell you you're crazy. And even these conversations, if you bring it up, they're going to go, no, it's solar radiation modification. And they filled out a weather modification form to do it. This is how dumb this stuff tends to get. And I don't mean, like, if you ask the experts, they'll probably happily tell you it's weather modification, but it's the way that it is framed for you by the media and the government, because they're involved as much as the next thing will make it seem like they try to distance themselves. They're using government, they're using a aircraft carrier, or is it a decommissioned aircraft carrier. Let's not pretend like that's just owned by some company. These are government-owned locations, buildings, vehicles. Now it says, solar radiation modification is controversial because widespread use of technologies like marine cloud brightening, which if you actually look into just that, there's some wild stuff they're talking about. They're just using salt now, but the whole process overlaps with all the stuff we've heard about, aluminum, barium, all kinds of things. But it says, could alter weather patterns. Okay, and unclear ways, and potentially limit the productivity of fisheries and farms. So that's okay. So we're literally talking about the idea of sustainability, well, even though we know that they're actually fighting that. And they're testing this new thing and going, well, but it could completely ruin weather patterns or alter them, which is my point. My point is that people, when you're talking about altering weather patterns, you're usually talking about something that is not enough rain, things like that, which hurt production, which hurt crops, farming, and potentially the productivity of fisheries and farms in general. Now, how does that not overlap with just about everything else we're seeing in the world right now, where it seems to be like systematic destruction of infrastructure and food supplies? Seems kind of crazy to me, but you guys can decide for yourselves. It also wouldn't address the main cause of climate change. What? So you're willing to risk productivity of food and processes, but this might not even do what you think it's going to do, and you're going to test it anyway? Yes. It says the use of fossil fuels, it might not address the main cause of climate change, which they claim is the use of fossil fuels, and could lead to a catastrophic spike in global temperatures if major geoengineering, which that's what it is, activities were discontinued before greenhouse gases decreased to manageable levels. So all they're really saying is we're going to commit the world to this, which it's, again, like a drug addiction for the world. And if we stop before we get the temperatures down to the level we claim it needs to be, which plenty of experts argue that's dangerous in and of itself, they're wrong in what they're doing, then until we do that, we can't stop this. But if we do, it'll be even more catastrophic. It almost kind of feels like a self-fulfilling prophecy, doesn't it? Like you're making the catastrophe using the... Well, guess what, guys? It's exactly what always happens. The solution tends to be worse than the problem. If you're talking about the U.S. government, at the very least. Make sure I didn't just miss that. Oh, I think I stopped early. Hold on. Yeah, so right here, going forward. The University of Washington and Silver Lining, which is just all these names are hilarious to me, a geoengineering research advocacy group involved with CARE project, you know, Silver Lining CARE. Clearly, they're like, good, positive. This is good for you. Pretty much the opposite in every way that I've seen, but it says declined interview requests, of course, because, you know, honest people don't want to talk to the press when they want to promote their project, right? Right. The secrecy surrounding the landmark experiment seems to have been by design, according to the New York Times, which, along with the local newspaper, was granted exclusive access to cover the initial fire. That seems like an organized propaganda effort. Controlled release through one platform. This is what you're supposed to think. We won't talk to anybody else. That's not normal, guys. It says the idea of interfering with nature is so contentious, organizers of Tuesday's test kept the details tightly held. Well, doesn't that exactly tell you? Isn't that implicit? Like, the point is right there. The reason we need to... Why would you not tell people? I mean, I guess the bottom line is clearly they would want to know. And that's why you didn't tell them. And that is, it's a crime as far as I can tell. Again, unless the regulations are so completely broken and loopholes everywhere, which is probably the case. But they kept it secret because they knew you wouldn't like it. And that's supposed to be okay? It says concern that critics would try to stop them. Well, yeah, you're spraying in the atmosphere above their families. And again, we've talked about this in the past 239 times that the U.S. government has admitted to doing tests like this. And we'll point out one in regard to Operation Sea Spray. Actually, let me see if that even pops up. I haven't searched for that in a while. Oh, I think I have one right here that connects to it. Good. Yeah, I remember this. I refocused on this during one of my shows in 2020. In coronavirus, we trust. Medical surveillance state for government that's experimented on you 239 times. Oh, the link wasn't there. I'll have to go back and include that. Well, the links are in there for the show if you want to check it out. And it says the White House also distanced itself from the experiment. Oh, really? Which is being conducted with the cooperation of the Smithsonian Affiliated Museum, right? So a complete, a government overlapped everything, right? So the White House letting them use an aircraft carrier and government, I mean, this is the White House distanced itself from it, but let them, like, it's obvious this is a government allowed project. There's no way around that. So distancing themselves from it only tells me even more. This is something they're carefully conducting. It says the project team has touted its transparency. Think about that. Noting that visitors to the USS Hornet, which now serve as a floating museum, will be able to view the experiment. Another USS something being used, the distance in the White House not involved. What do you mean your transparency? You hid this from everybody because they can stand on a ship and watch the thing you didn't tell about? Somehow that's transparent? quote, the world needs to rapidly advance its understanding of the efforts of aerosol particles on climate, right? That's my point. So the only reason they pretend like this makes sense is because the benefits outweigh the risks. Oh, there we are again, right? So yes, we know that this might cause problems, but the climate change, and it's happening so fast, we need to do it now. We need to find out quickly before we all die. And if you actually read into this, that's what they're actually giving you, right? They're admitting that it could cause problems. They're admitting that it's a test, but they're saying the world needs to rapidly find out. Why? Because we're about to be doomed. Is that true? If it wasn't true, well, then they're clearly doing dangerous things to test on you because of something that isn't going to happen. Or at least not the way they say it is. The CARE project is part of a larger coastal study that the University of Washington Consortium is planning to pursue. Right. It's not a one-stop thing, but even though we know it's been going on for decades and a lot longer, they're already telling you this is going to be a project. Are we going to pretend like because we go, we don't like it, or because it doesn't do what they want, they're just going to stop? Well, then that's not an experiment. That's a program. But it says the second phase of that effort would take place on a pier around a mile offshore in a coastal environment, according to a study description the school released Monday. While a peer review of that proposal was generally positive, of course, the scientist also flagged some transparency shortcomings. Yeah, the group that was screaming about their transparency, turns out they weren't that transparent. Shocking. One reviewer noted that it would help to have a little more information on the site location. Yeah, well, maybe a little bit. And it says, is there local resistance or concerns, whether founded or unfounded, around issues like air quality, local air? How many options exist? And how do different options affect the field study plan? The point is, these are the people in that commissioned report going, you don't address any of this. That's supposed to be paramount, especially if it's considered an experiment. Who are the subjects? Is there informed consent? I mean, the fact that they even have the courage to call it an experiment, it shows me that the government and they're aware that things have shifted. The removal of informed consent, which, by the way, remember this. Oh, dang it. Of course, I just did that. Darn it. I'm almost done anyway. I just lost my highlighting. I have the screenshots. This is actually a shout out to Josh Walkos, and he did research on this, and this is where I saw it first anyway. And I just include the article so you can check it out for yourself. Dissolution of informed consent. And this was the FDA, and these are public documents coming out from the government. And the point was, am I forgetting to add those? How is that possible? I'm sorry, for the podcast, the links aren't there. But the point is, they came out and basically said that if they consider there not to be enough risk, then there's no need for informed consent. I mean, guys, all they did was allow the corrupt entities to make up an argument that, don't worry, it's safe and effective, so we don't need to tell you about it. Well, how does that work out? How is that working out right now? It's just so alarming to me to even pretend that makes sense. But going on, it says, the study plan also made no mention of its potential ecological impacts. Oh, this is incredible to me. A key consideration recommended even by the Biden administration on specifically cloud marine brightening. But they just don't care. You know why? Because this is not just a random experiment by some company or a college. This is a government program. It says that's a significant oversight. Yeah, you don't say. But what's going to happen about it? Nothing. So it's not a significant oversight, and it's not some big damning issue because no one cares. This is lip service. This is to make you think we do care because, look, we're pointing out a problem that we don't resolve and don't ever talk about again. It says, history has shown us that when we insert ourselves into modification of nature, do you already know where this is going? Can you guess what the latter half of that sentence is? There are always very serious unintended consequences, but we're going to do it anyway, should be the rest of that clip or quote. That's Goldsmith, who studies the implications of climate change for planet structure and function. So a guy who literally is talking about what they can do for climate change is simply going, every time we stick our fingers into this, we make it worse, but they're going to do it anyway. It should be the motto of the United States government. It says, therefore, be prudent to listen to what history has shown us and look for consequences. Nope, that's not what the government does. Let me include these for you. Now here, just in case, talking about the 239 times, and if you haven't seen this article, it's originally the Free Thought Project article, and it is about admitted from government sources, admitting to them over the last 70 years of 239 times they've used biological or chemical tests on unwitting populations. And here is one of the most famous, Operation Sea Spray. in the 1950s, a U.S. naval secret biological warfare experiment in which Serratia marcescens and Bacillus globigli, they're both bacteria, were sprayed over San Francisco and the Bay in California in order to determine, at least they said, how vulnerable cities like San Francisco would be to a bioweapon attack. Even if that's the real excuse, all they admitted to was we're using U.S. test subjects without your knowledge. It says the Army determined that San Francisco had received enough of a dose for nearly all of the city's 800,000 residents to inhale at least 5,000 of these particles. Each one of the 800,000 residents to inhale 5,000 individual particles of these problematic things. This is within the range of infectivity for anthrax. Now, that's what Wikipedia writes. Now, the point here, I genuinely think that this didn't stop after one person died, which is what happened, which I'll read the rest of it. Imagine what would happen if you dump an entire city with different types of bacteria enough to infect every one of them, and then it causes problems. Even weirdly, problems that seem to connect with other things we seem to associate with other virus concepts today. I wonder whether this was some kind of beginning point for the ongoing, or whether there was things before this. Either way, I don't see how this couldn't have been an ongoing issue. Maybe this became something that is something we now point at as something else. Just stuff to consider. It says on October 11, 1950, 11 residents checked in to Stanford Hospital in San Francisco with very rare, serious urinary tract infections. Although 10 recovered, one of them, Edward Nevin, who had a recent prostate surgery, died 3 weeks later from a heart valve infection. Now, pretty much everybody in this conversation acknowledges, including government sources, that this person died from what happened. They put up a big case, a big resistance from the government to claim that this had nothing to do with that, despite the fact that it was all completely correlated with what happened. It was a rare surge in the one location where they sprayed. Well, everything that lines up, except they just go, oh, it was a coincidence. Again, exactly like we talk about today. No, it wasn't that. It's just coincidence. All these heart problems, all these things, all the cancers, all coincidence, right? It says cases of pneumonia in San Francisco also randomly increased after this was released. Okay, again, could this have been the starting point of some ongoing pneumonia circulation that is recurring that we call flu, we call whatever else, or that it's alongside that? I mean, it's something we have to consider. The bacterium was also combined with phenol and an anthrax stimulant and sprayed across South Dorset by the U.S. and U.K. military scientists. Whoa, so it's a multinational experiment on U.S. citizens as part of the DICE trials that ran from 1971 to 1975. So this is not a unique thing, guys. They are literally doing this to you right now, in my opinion. I don't need to sell that for people that believe what COVID-19 was that. But it says there was no evidence that the Army had alerted health authorities before blanketing the region with bacteria. Doctors later wondered whether the experiment might be responsible for all the problems they saw. Now, the bottom line is they end up, it says Army officials noted the pneumonia outbreak in their testimony, but said any link to their experiment was totally coincidental. Now, apparently they went into an investigation and a court hearing. Bottom line, through, I think, lower courts and Supreme Court, they all ultimately ruled that they couldn't prove it was connected, which doesn't mean that it wasn't. But that gets used by the government to say that we proved it wasn't. That's not what they actually proved. They just simply argued that they couldn't connect the two because, you know, the hospital overlap. Of course, it's great to point out that we have, you know, our third leading cause of death is medical treatment. And so they're like, well, they all got infections in the hospital. Everyone bought it. Or maybe it's what happened. I don't know. In any case, I think that's an important thing to realize that this is not a unique story. Now, back to the point about what's happening today. Or really the point about this topic. This is an older article, but it's about what they're doing. The scientist says these scientists have a wild plan to throw salt in the atmosphere. Now, here's my point about this not being an experiment. This is 2018. So here it is in 2018, which, by the way, you can go even further than that and show that they've been doing this, not just talking about it, doing it. And here they are doing the exact same thing, doing it, talking about it, studying it. Okay. But then this comes up and it's like random new quiet test that where it's like, and the whole framing is as some new, you know, step into the future, right? The new thing we're testing out. And you read the whole article and the whole thing is about this being a test that we're trying to find out because it's only starting now. Well, then how do you explain this conversation? It says sprinkling large amounts of salt into the atmosphere could stave off climate change. It's the same exact thing a group of researchers has proposed. But other climate scientists aren't so sure. And again, at this very moment, and even well further back, you can prove they were already spraying barium and aluminum and plenty of other things. It's a public and provable topic. This is for the average person. But it says, but other climate scientists aren't so sure. This idea falls into a category of geoengineering, a deliberate, large-scale attempt to change the environment as a means to counteract climate change, or for whatever the real reason is, or whatever it actually does. But it says the idea is to seed salt into the upper troposphere, the atmospheric layer most commercial airplanes fly over because of its weather conditions and clouds. Yeah, and that's why when we talk about stratospheric aerosol injection, I think that's the what we're talking about there. But it says the idea was put forward in part by Robert Nelson, a senior scientist at the Planetary Science Institute, a nonprofit whose scientists study planetary systems, including the solar system. Their proposal is hardly the first geoengineering idea out there. Right, so we're going to pretend that they've never done it before. They've been talking about this for 40 years, but no one's done it. We all know what's happening. It says other scientists have considered injecting tiny particles known as aerosols into the stratosphere. That's what I was talking about, for the stratospheric aerosol injection, the region above the troposphere, as a way to cool the planet, Science Magazine reported. It says, however, many of the aerosols scientists have suggested using, such as, and this is my point, this is going on simultaneously, and the people that are pointing to their experiment with salt crystals have also done these things. It says using things such as diamond dust or aluminum. They're harmful to the ozone, a layer that protects the Earth's surface from some of the sun's ultraviolet rays, and human health. Didn't stop them, though. But in 2015, while studying evaporated salts on the surface of solar system bodies, such as the dwarf planet Ceres, Nelson realized that table salt was a possibility. It's more reflective than aluminum and harmless to humans, according to them, I guess. I mean, it sounds hard to believe, but it says in regard to the reflective part, it says, in addition, if it were ground up into small particles and released into the upper troposphere, the salt would not block infrared heat released by Earth, which also helps the planet cool. But it sounds like, I mean, you could point out so many different obvious things that could be problematic with that, which, again, they already told you. Not even just whether it's going to mediate health problem, but what this could do could have cascading problems for just general weather patterns, for productivity. That's huge. But the idea of crushing it up into like a fine aerosol and doing that, I mean, that's the idea of like the salt crystals makes more sense to me, because this, in any case, all of this seems very alarming to me because it's a test. This is 2018. Now, for the last part, it says, for starters, salt, or NaCl, contains chlorine, which is a constituent of ozone-depleting chlorofluorocarbons, or just simply CFCs. So this could actually worsen ozone depletion. I mean, really? I mean, just think how this is the 2018 article discussing the exact same thing that they just did in San Francisco. They're saying that the chlorine that's in salt that they are using, that's part of the chemical makeup of salt, is one of the things that could actually hurt the ozone. So not even just the long-term problem of stopping, which could cause it to get worse, but in fact, it could just not even be good for it. It could actually harm the very thing they claim they're trying to do. Or maybe that's what they're just trying to do. I don't know. But it seems pretty stupid to me that it's this easy to see. It says it's harmful to human health because it lets ultraviolet radiation into Earth, according to the Union of Concerned Scientists. The ozone depletion is the point they're making. It says Simon Tilms, a project scientist at the National Center for Atmospheric Research in Boulder, Colorado, added that salt often includes iodine. Now, that point is a broader one, because I think they could choose to get salt without it, right? Because iodine, I just mentioned this, actually. It's weird that we still even have iodine salt, seeing as how that was only added to something so common as salt because they knew it was on everyone's tables and people had a problem getting enough iodine, 50 years ago, and there was a goiter problem. Remember the people with the big lumps on their neck and so on? That was done, at least as I understand the history, to solve that. Today, there doesn't seem to be a problem of people having a shortage of iodine, yet we still use it. And frankly, as a chef, I find it tastes weird. So in any case, the point is, it says a reactive element that could not just impact ozone chemistry, but the troposphere in the troposphere, but also affect chemical reactions in the stratosphere. So let's just say, for sake of conversation, they just happened to use iodine salt instead or accidentally one time. It could have an immediate chemical reaction. A lot of things could happen. It says, moreover, the salt's reflectance has thus far been measured in a laboratory setting, and we don't know how its properties would change upon delivery through a nozzle or some other device. So now that's my point. So these are all tests using you as the subject without informed consent. It's also unclear, it says, how much salt would be needed to be deployed to reduce surface temperature, or how it would interact with the water vapor, clouds, and the temperature in general, to name just a few unknowns. Now, we'll get into some points next that claim, at the least, they've been testing stuff in labs. But my point would be simply, if you don't really know how much would be needed, isn't that an art? Couldn't you then frame that as the same way as saying we might accidentally do too far, far too much that might then cause a bigger problem? Of course. I mean, these are all just pointing out the obvious unknowns in doing an experiment with human subjects that don't know they're experiment subjects. And it says, last one, Nelson couldn't be reached for comment, but told Science Magazine that he plans to further study salt's properties to see how feasible the project is. What's more, he would like to engage with the public before implementing the salty mission. Of course, we don't like that. Let's get a different group to do it so we can keep it secret and pretend like, you know, this clearly, however it worked out, that's not what actually happened. And it's not some new experiment, seeing as how it's been talked about and done a long time ago. This one is an article from the University of Washington. And it says, this is from April 2nd, 2024. Marine cloud brightening program studies clouds, aerosols, and pathway to reduce climate risks. It says, researchers with the UW Marine Cloud Brightening Program, an international scientific initiative, are working to better understand clouds and how both inadvertent and possibly intentional changes to atmospheric particles affect clouds. Atmospheric particles, they say, also called aerosols, can have a strong effect on sunlight reflected by clouds. As humans make changes to aerosol emissions, we need a stronger scientific understanding of these effects in order to better understand the potential risks and benefits and to limit unintended effects. I mean, this is this month, right? This is 2 days before they did this experiment above human beings. Right. So, and I just don't even know how you could put these two things in the same conversation. They're telling you, we don't know. We don't really know what's going to happen. Not truly what the byproducts, they have an estimation, but they don't know. It says, there's now strong evidence that reductions in ship emissions, so the very thing they're trying to stop in the world, right? Emissions from the cars, from the, you know, these big ships with all the big stuff coming out of those little smokestacks or the big smokestacks, right? So they're saying is there's now actually strong evidence reductions in those emissions started in 2020 actually contributed in part to the anomalously warm waters recently observed in North Atlantic Ocean. So just get this. This is a small point, but the reality that they're literally telling you that the very thing that we're doing this to stop, climate change, they claim is being caused by carbon and pollution and everything else, right? They're saying that we now see when we made an effort to really reduce those emissions from the ships, it actually caused the waters to warm. And so how does that even line up even remotely with what we're being told? It's in fact the exact opposite. But it goes, the truth is that we still don't have very good handle on how big of an effect aerosol changes can have globally, because cloud responses to aerosols can vary enormously depending on the type of cloud and on meteorology. Yeah, but doesn't that seem like a good reason not test on people right now? But the interesting part about this, they talk about the ships. Basically, what they said is from airplanes, you could see like this weird brightening along the ship path because the emissions were changing the atmosphere. And so they just simply point out that they recognize when they tried to stop that, it actually warmed the water. And I just think this is ridiculous because it completely contradicts the larger point they're making. But it says, but before any intervention like this can be considered, it is crucial to fully understand how it will affect the climate system, our oceans, and our terrestrial ecosystems, which they clearly don't know, because right over here, they're telling you we're testing on you to find those things out. Seems logical, right? Hardly. Quote, the goal of the MCB program is to understand whether it might even be possible to predictably and reliably brighten low marine clouds. Oh, great. Might not even be possible. And if so, how doing this is different in different regions of the globe would affect temperatures, precipitation, and climate, both globally and locally, as well as any other possible side effects. And how about we add to that, what if they start doing this in the United States and then other countries just start doing it too? No one's checking or asking. And all of a sudden, what if you're adding too much, the right amount here, but suddenly Mexico does even more, and all of a sudden there's too much in general. I mean, it's not as simple as that, but you have to realize that this is uncontrolled. Frankly, I think they know that. I don't think this is about what they're claiming it is. It says, as atmospheric scientists, we think it's critically important that society has the answers to these questions before making any decisions about whether or not to actually use marine cloud brightening in an effort to reduce climate risks. Then 2 days later, they started doing it. A different group, but they started doing this. It says, in order to better understand how aerosol particles interact with clouds and how intentionally brightened clouds would interact with our global climate system, the Marine Cloud Brightening Program researchers are taking a multi-pronged approach. It says the first phases of the research have focused on computer modeling to study how aerosol cloud interactions affect climate. I mean, I don't even know how this, I mean, it's a separate group. So they're doing what I would argue is the correct way to test this, right? To study this before you dump it over people. And clearly, while they're doing that, other groups have already started. And they must know that, right? I mean, it seems like an interesting thing. But then it says this spring, so now, essentially, the Marine Cloud Brightening Program researchers are putting CARI to the test, their whole cloud aerosol research instrument, to the test at the new research facility they've established on board the USS Hornet Sea Air and Space Museum, the Smithsonian affiliate. Okay, so I take it back what I said in general, the other group. I actually forgot about that. So the point is clearly this is the same overlap. So it makes it even more important. Because ultimately what we're talking about here is this is a group that's saying publicly that we have to test this properly before we start using it because we don't know the risks. Now, I just don't get why you can, if you want to argue this is an experiment and this is that in a smaller area, well, fine, you're still doing it above unwitting people you didn't inform. There's nothing controlled about that. I mean, I don't even know how you call it an experiment. I mean, experiment would apply, but you can't call it a controlled experiment. There's endless atmosphere. So how do you even test that? So the bottom line is this clearly seems irresponsible at the least. Here, what Maureen Lopez said, just somebody who commented on this when Disclosed TV shared this on the 6th about what they were doing. He says, injecting salt crystals in the atmosphere, what could possibly go wrong? What happens if it reflects too much light? What happens to the ground when the salt finds its way back into the earth? How will it affect fresh water supplies? I bet no one's answered these questions. Exactly my mindset. Exactly. I swear I shared that. Exactly what I'm thinking. Because the bottom line is the for crops, well, if you have too much salt in the earth, like salting the earth, we've heard about this, right? It hurts the growing of crops or the water. So what happens if you get too much salt concentration in local water supplies? I mean, there's so many things. Now, obviously, you could argue that it just won't be that much. And they're smart enough to make sure it won't be that way. Well, sure. Just trust in the experts, guys. How'd that work out in every other historical situation? I'm not saying we shouldn't at least consider that they're trying to do what they think is right, but we have to realize that the government is usually the manipulating hand over most of these things. And this really does concern me. So let's bring this into the conversation of what I think truly concerns me the most. And this is the idea that there's an overlap. The idea that there is a connection between whatever they're spraying, aerosol nanoparticles, and actual nanotechnology. Or maybe there has been along the way. Maybe it started as something that not including this, and the point was like, hey, what if we use nanotechnology to affect the atmosphere? And they go, whoa, what if now we find ourselves in a pandemic? What happened? Or they argue, why don't we start using this to spray the things we need? Self-spreading concepts or any number of things. I mean, just on that very note, here, just the opening part of it is what I've shared many times on that regard. This is a 2020 European consortium conversation. It was massive about whether or not self-spreading vaccines were a thing or needed to be done. And in fact, at that time, I could already prove to you they're being worked on. Fauci, I'll bring up the clip next or the article.
Since the outbreak of COVID-19, the word virus has been dominating media headlines as well as our daily lives. Did you know that one approach that has been proposed to control virally transmitted diseases is by releasing a virally transmitted vaccine? Unlike traditional vaccines, infectious vaccines do not require any individual consent. Infectious solutions are also being developed for food and agriculture and are currently making their way through the regulatory approval process. However, do we really want to intentionally disperse these modified viruses outside the lab?
No, we do not want that. But the point is, this was a big conversation, and clearly it's something that scientists and the international community has leaned into. And there's new studies doing this stuff right now. And so this is what we covered this a long time ago, 2021, 2020, self-spreading vaccines, self-amplifying mRNA vaccines, and just generally could COVID vaccine menstruate, could and COVID vaccine menstrual disruption. This is just the topics we covered May 2nd, 2021. And this is my point about the overlap, specifically this one first, which was Ralph Baric. The U.S. funded research on coronavirus-induced myocarditis. 100%. The documents are in the down below with the source material. You can check it out for yourself. They literally worked on, in the 90s, creating a coronavirus that creates myocarditis, and we don't consider that today. And on top of that, then did they make that and then work on aerosolizing it? Yes, they did in the caves of China, also sourced right below from their own documents. So self-spreading vaccine. They literally created this to spread amongst the bats in these caves. Guys, it's a real concept. It's very public. People just don't like to talk about it because it's conspiracy theory. So the point is, on this video we're going to watch, the first short version of it, we need to think about how this might overlap and whether it's always been the whole point and it's all this all a big facade, or it just was a matter of, you know, the matter of the moment. Suddenly they feel like they have a need to create or use it this way, and suddenly it becomes something that's deployed. I don't know. Either way, my point has only ever been that we need to be aware that these things exist and realize that your government has never shied away from trying things on you without you knowing about it. So let's watch this first clip. Orwell, share this with me. Thank you for that. This is fairly interesting. And this is from, technically, here's the full one, and I'll include this as well. We're going to go over a bit of that, but I might go over this more. It's 18 minutes. This is from February 8th, 2014. Or excuse me, 2013. Oh, I thought this was his channel. So this is a TED Talk of an Israeli scientist discussing how the Pfizer part of it's also very clear. We'll get over next how Pfizer worked with him and his university to evaluate drug delivery via DNA nanobots. It's just crazy. It's just fake news, though, even though it's publicly discussed. So here's the clip about this first. Breaks it down pretty well.
All the technologies you're going to see here now are real. To first tell you the story about this little girl named Dana. She's very special for me because she's my daughter. And Dana was born with a leg condition requiring frequent surgery. Surgeries today are complicated and they're often very risky. Now let's imagine a few years into the future, into the near future hopefully, Dana will arrive to the hospital for her due surgery. And instead of being prepped for anesthesia for the OR, the surgeon will just take a syringe. Inside the syringe, there are millions of tiny robots, of tiny machines that will be injected into Dana's bloodstream. They will autonomously locate the place they need to be in. They will excise out the injured tissue. They will remove dead cells. Then they will stimulate and guide the regrowth of healthy cells across those tissue gaps. They will release drugs that relieve pain and reduce inflammation. When these robots have completed their job, they'll simply disintegrate and disappear from her bloodstream the next day. So these nanobots have been envisioned in the past 30 years by people like Eric Drexler and Robert Freitas and Ray Kurzweil.
And Charles Lieber and Robert Langer. But the point is that they don't necessarily have to go away or dissipate. But that's interesting, though, right? That's sort of a perfect crime, isn't it? If you could create something like that that could do any number of things. And we've talked about this. We'll point this out in a moment about the dual-use concept. Well, they've already executed things like this many times in the past in regard to, let's say, an assassination, right? Something that can be deployed, that can execute a certain process, deliver some kind of chemical or some kind of, you know, and then completely no evidence. You know, I find it hard to believe that anybody would balk at that being something any government would be capable of doing.
Today, I'm going to show you that these robots exist here in Israel. And I'll show you this syringe. So, which I brought from my lab. So this syringe has inside it 1,000 billion robots. So these robots are each 50 nanometers long, which you can...
1,000 billion. Now, here's an interesting point. Now, by the way, there's others that have covered this, I think last week and so on. So there's others out there that have covered this long before we've talked about it. This is something that we've talked about in the past. right? And I'm still to this very day very skeptical about a lot of the things that come out about what people claim are in the injections. Not that I dismiss anything for that matter, but just skeptical. There's a lot of different stuff that I've seen come from a lot of the people that have shown a lot of these things that I can prove aren't true. And you know, a lot of the people I pointed out, not necessary to bring it up now. The point though is that these are, first of all, what he's telling you are nanobots. And we've shown, I'm going to show you another video in a moment of the DARPA version, right? The Mu chip. We've gone over this many times, and these are 12, 15 years old, right? These are old things. And they're tiny. They're the size of smaller than a piece, thinner than a piece of paper, smaller than a piece of hair. You know what? I think it was actually 10 times smaller than a piece of paper, like in regard to the thickness. But what people have pointed out is that this, interestingly, look like things that have been highlighted around some of these conversations, right? Saying this is what they found inside the injection. Now, you should not dismiss that. Just because I'm still skeptical, which I am about everything, by the way, it's interesting to think about whether some of these people have come out with these, you know, microscopy, whatever the term is, the, you know, under a microscope, the slides and the videos and the examples of what they claim are something foreign. Some people argue that they're, you know, for example, Japan claimed they found metal shavings or black metal, right? That's actually what they said. People just argued it was like processed stuff that came from the process of making it. And when they said that, I was like, oh my God, really? So that's the answer, that it was shavings of metal from when you made these things? And then we're pretending these are still safe and effective? Like, that's ridiculous. Or even worse, something much more alarming. But I still find that fascinating because this is long before. This is 2015 from an Israeli scientist working with Pfizer. I find that ridiculously crazy. But it's interesting. And to me, adds a lot of credence to the idea that some of these things could be real. I don't know why we would dismiss that. I never have. I just am skeptical about how they've come out from certain groups. Like, for example, like the overlap I'll point out again in a minute, which doesn't have to be what we're talking about, of graphene oxide and how it seems. And I think the expose I usually point to did a great job on this, highlighting that in the Pfizer's documentation, and we've gone over many times, it shows you that they did, in fact, use graphene oxide, but this was during the testing process, at least as they state anyway. I mean, who knows what the reality is? And that is there, and that was not actually in the actual vial. But expose did a great job on this, highlighting that in that very thing, they acknowledge that there is some residue or some carryover. It's minute. But that still makes the point that then by default, then there is, in fact, graphene oxide in these injections. But that's not what they're claiming. You get these fact checks to say 100% fake news. But Pfizer's own document admits that there is some residual overlap. I find that ridiculous. But my point in all that is that the people that came out early in that conversation and said 90% graphene oxide, you still know what I think about that. I think that was designed to actually hide this conversation, to make it ridiculous. So people like us would be like, well, that's not true. I mean, maybe I'm still wrong, though. All that to say that this seems to interestingly add more insight to whether there might actually be something that's maybe some kind of foreign object, or even worse, nanotechnology. And that's crazy. That's terrifying, because that goes into everything that, you know, is pretty much my biggest fear about all this. But as somebody asked in the chat, you know, like these nanobots, nanotechnology at this level, remember, it doesn't have to be metal or graphene oxide. Like there's a lot of overlap to this. And this is where we get into the very alarming kind of biological, technological overlap that Charles Lieber worked on, that a lot of these guys have worked on. So continuing the video.
As you can see in this slide under the microscope, 50 nanometers is about 2,000 times thinner than the thickness of your hair.
2,000 times thinner. I mean, just this is my point constantly about these rice-sized chips and all the brain-machine interface and all these things are doing. When you literally have evidence of things that he's saying is 1,000 times thinner than a piece of hair, and there's 1,000 billion of them inside that one syringe. And I'll go through this. The information he's highlighting, these are things that have remote information. They can be controlled from outside. And this is from 2015. And I'll show you the clip that goes even further back. And yet still, I was on Alison Morrow's show about this, and people are acting like that's ridiculous. Like, how can you even pretend that smart does? And then on top of that, I will add something that I do take seriously, which is that somebody who I highly respect, who I've reached out to again, Jay Cooey, argues that they have just not been able to achieve this, which may mean that it's not possible. That's his opinion. And I highly respect this person. I think he's very intelligent. So that very much added to my opinion. But I still feel, based on all of that, that I think that the evidence suggests that it is likely or happening. That's my opinion. But I want to make sure. And see, that's the point we made the other day. It's always important that we give you alternate opinions and we show you that there is other thought, but from people that we respect and people that we think are honest, even if we disagree. That's what I'm saying. Last part's my opinion. But my God, think about how obvious that is. And think about all the things they're trying to push on you today as these larger new breakings, like, you know, new geoengineering project that we've been doing for 50 years. That's happening a lot right now.
Okay. And these robots were born actually 3 years ago in a research I did with Sean Douglas, now a UCSF professor. But over the past year and a half, in my group at Bar-Ilan University, we've been developing and testing robots for a variety of medical and therapeutic tasks. We've invented ways of making them safe for use and non-immunogenic, and we learned how to tune their stability in our bloodstream to fit either short-term or long-term, even days-long medical procedures. We're using the perfect, most beautiful molecule on Earth, at least in my opinion, which is DNA. And in fact, every part of the robot, every part of our nanorobots, moving parts, axes, locks, chassis, software, everything is made from DNA molecules. And the technology that enables us to do this originated 30 years ago in the pioneering works of Nadrian Seaman, culminating 7 years ago in the works of Paul Rothman from Caltech, which was also featured in TED. And it's called DNA origami.
DNA origami. Now, we've talked about this. We've talked about the folding origami shapes and the different, that overlaps with the graphene oxide, or it can. So that's just a quick little breakdown. So I also, and by the way, I already showed you these, include these other articles for you to check out. Here's the longer one. I want to play a couple of the clips from this that I thought were relevant. And it just, this overlaps with so many things. And what I'll say right now that we'll get into in the next article is this guy went to MIT, and that's where this information, you know, his kind of background from studying. And that's also where Robert Langer, the main body of his work comes from. I just find that to be an interesting overlap. So let's watch a couple of these clips, starting with 1525 here. And as always, I'll include all the source material, which it seems few seem to do today. So all this will be down here for you, the entire clip, the full video. You can check it all out for yourself. Check out all the source material, which is monumentally important today.
We already have systems that can control multiple drugs simultaneously as a result of biocomputers. This is real universal computing.
By the way, on the screen there, you can see like a bug. As much as, you know, there's so many things that people just roundly dismiss as fake, even though it's very real stuff.
A living animal. Now, we already have systems that have computing capacity of an 8-bit computer like Commodore 64. To make sure we don't lose control over the nanorobots after they're injected, my team developed nanorobots that carry antenna. These antenna are made from metal nanoparticles. Now, the antenna enable the nanobots to respond to externally applied electromagnetic fields. So these nanorobots...
Externally applied. Now we're getting into the idea of like magnetogenetics and optogenetics. And, you know, either... But the bottom line is something outside influencing a reaction internally, which could be good or bad, right? I mean, this is the whole point about dual-use technology.
These versions of nanobots can actually be activated with the press of a button on a joystick. Or, for example, using a controller such as the Xbox or Wii, if you ever
think about
had
that.
A chance to play with those.
And now think about the overlap that with the idea of how they're training children today on Xbox for military, for drones, or things like this that Derek Rose just wrote about for T-Lab. Blending reality. The World Economic Forum calls for creation of metaverse identity in latest push for digital dystopia. Literally trying to create the idea. And the argument really comes down to like some kind of a human right push where every child needs to have a digital ID. And they're trying to work these people into this system at a young age right now. That's terrifying to me, especially as he's over here telling you that they can control these things with things like an Xbox controller. Like, I see an overlap there. And it may not, you know, right now, that's what our minds are at, the Xbox controller. But what happens when it comes to something like what you're looking at now? That's really where I think it's at, or even much further.
One of my students in the lab tried configuring an Xbox app to control nanobots. For example, you can imagine nanorobots being injected to Dana, my daughter, for example. And the doctor can guide those robots into the site, into the leg, and just activate them with a hand gesture.
Now, I should always point out, and I sometimes don't end up saying this, and it's not because I don't think it. It's because I feel like it's self-evident. But clearly, it's always possible that these things could also have a positive use. You know, or let's just say it's a given. I mean, anything could be used in a positive way in some case, I would argue. But just like Derek has written about a lot of times in this kind of stuff, is that clearly – Just because it could also be used in a positive way does not mean that we should just blindly allow that. Like even just the conversation of what I still think is sort of a red herring, the brain machine interface that Elon Musk talks about, even though we're currently talking about things that use smart dust and magnogenetics. And, you know, this is currently, and a lot of experts even made this point where it actually is that I just lost my point. What was he saying?
And you can already see an example, Dana, my daughter, for example, and the doctor can guide those robots into the site, into the leg, and just activate them with a hand gesture.
Oh, yeah, just that they could be positive attributes. My point being that even that, you know, that you could argue that maybe that could help people walk again or whatever these arguments are. And maybe that's even true. I don't know. But at the end of the day, it's obvious to see that that's not the only thing that's being used for, right? So don't pretend like it's all bad. But we need to realize it's like the same point they make about injections or even medicine. It's about intent. Who is behind this and what's their actual intention? Are they really concerned about whether or not we're harmed by things? Do they really want to help? I don't believe that. I think it's self-evident based on what they've already been doing that that's not there. And that's why I say things like if what we think we understand about vaccinology, which is a big question today, I would argue that with the right intention and not forced on anybody, that there could be a positive use for some of these things. Maybe I'm wrong, though. But that being said, that's kind of the same point here.
And you can already see an example where we actually took cancer cells and loaded robots with cancer drugs and activated the drug by a hand gesture. And we can actually kill cancer cells just by doing this, as you can see here. And the interesting thing is that because the controller, like the Xbox, is connected to the internet, the controller actually links those nanobots to the network. So they have an actual IP address. And they can be accessed from a remote device sitting on the same network. For example, my doctor's smartphone.
Right, right. So literally you have your body. This is where we get into, which we haven't done a big push on, right? The WAN, what is it? WAN, the wireless body network conversation, right? I mean, how long have we been talking about this? Like there's a lot of stuff that we've been talking, you know, I mean, how long truly? Like Whitney and I've talked about things going so far back on this conversation. I remember one so far back where we talked about the idea of just exactly. In fact, it was nanotechnology and the COVID injections and it was overlapped with artificial intelligence. And my point was simply, you know, I feel like there's an overlap to this where they might be trying to mesh the brain, like the human brain and the way that they're surveilling your brain processes in order to try to figure out how it works in order to try to reach their artificial intelligence direction. Thank you, Orwell. WBAN or WBAN. And it's very alarming. Now, the idea that they're telling you, this is 2015, remember, that your body can have its own IP address, which can then clearly be meshed with the other aspect. Guys, I think exactly what this is, as just maybe one aspect of a much larger plan. I think it's interesting that that was something we highlighted so long ago. And still, it's called conspiracy theory. You know, I'll pat myself on the back for T-Lab in general, whether it's me or Whitney or anybody else, for doing things like that, where I'm willing to bet you that at some point, you're going to get a big story broken by some partisan player that's going to highlight that topic. And then it will be, you know, even though we can already see it.
So, okay, so just by controlling the controller, this can be done.
I'm just going to leave it there, actually. So it's a great clip that you guys should check out, the whole 18 minutes of it. Here's another one. This one first. This gets specifically into the Xbox controller aspect of it. I just thought it'd be good to give you a little bit more insight on that.
Have biologists written on the top of on your forehead? Most people think it means I can't program. It means I can't, do electronics. It means I can't do anything that's not biology. And I'm trying to shake people out of that feeling. What we do here is we look at nature as a source of inspiration, pool of design principles, as new and refreshing ideas on how to do things better. And we try to adopt these solutions into our technology. We're approaching science like designers to make better machines, better architectures, better ways of communicating between people.
Designer science. You gotta like that. That perfectly makes sense.
That's basically bio-inspired design. Nanotechnology is one of the things. We're using molecules as building blocks to make nanoscale machines. We use a technique known as DNA origami to take a piece of DNA and fold it into the 3D structure that comprises the robot, the machine. There's always something scientific you can do with everything. So I'm a big fan of Lego. We can make a Lego system, we can make a Lego set, but at the nanoscale. We can use DNA origami to make a Lego set so that children can learn nanotechnology, just like it's a sort of a Lego game. When I bought the Xbox, people in purchasing said, why do you need that? Why, are you going to play all day? And I said, hell yeah, like, yes. We also use the Xbox for, as a control interface for nanorobots. We're just submitting a paper about using, using brain-machine interfaces to control nanobots inside a living animal, depending on what you think.
Okay, so there may be an aspect of why maybe the actual direct hookup is some kind of necessary overlap. I don't know. Brain-machine interface to control nanotechnology in another living creature. Doesn't that just hit everything we're ever talking about? My God. 2015, Pfizer funded.
Amazing results in that. We're writing the paper right now. As a designers, we're just, we say, let's build something and see if it works. That's our approach, jumping off a cliff approach.
Yeah, let's just see what happens. Who knows if he has good or bad intentions. I think overall the point is that's what the governments tend to feel as well. Let's just throw it out there and see what works. Acting like that's not a danger for you.
If you tell someone there's nothing you can't do, there's nothing you can't, eventually they'll realize, oh, yeah, I can do everything. I can do anything I want.
Yeah, sure can. So here is the next one. There's one other video I want to show you. And this just gets into one part. This is also a 10-minute video, but there's one part I want to show you on this that I thought was interesting. And this was, where were we on that? 106.
The entire field as it looks today. So imagine that we could take all the facilities, all the equipment, all the knowledge required to perform a successful surgery and encode it in a single drop of saline. So that drop can be put inside a syringe. You can take it anywhere on Earth. You can give it to anyone in need without even having to anesthetize them first.
It's very interesting to talk about the transportation point, right? I mean, I still argue who knows what actually happened on the Omicron overlap. Botswana, South Africa, for those that have watched enough, I'm not going to go into it now, but you know what I'm talking about. The weird introduction of Omicron that bopped up in Botswana that no one talks about. Four diplomats with diplomatic immunity, which nobody ever identified. Like, again, that's even more interesting to the people that are, even watching this right now, screaming everything I say, the viruses aren't real, which maybe they're not. I've never denied the possibility of that conversation. But what's funny is, without listening, you're missing that other parts could be reality, like the idea of bacteria, right? That could be, or just the simple point that if we're talking about nanotech, then that doesn't have anything to do with the virus, does it? Except the fact that we get into the idea of what we already discussed more than once, which is the idea of the virus-sized transistor. Charles Lieber, we'll come back to that. But the idea that this very well, if he's talking about in 2015, the idea of having 1,000 billion of these things inside of a one drop of saline or whatever the number would be for one drop that you could then transport. I find that to be alarming. Just a possibility.
Inside the patient, the drop inside the syringe will find its target, will remove the cells, kill them, locate them from A to B.
Or you.
Recruit new cells to fix that tissue and have the computation capacity of a real computer. So how can this be done? This sounds a bit far-fetched, but let me explain to you how we can already do that, and I hope it will be enabled in the very near future.
Already do it in 2015. It's called fake news right now.
So if you could look inside that drop of saline, magnified by about 70,000, you'll
again.
See billions and billions of tiny objects. Each of these objects that you see here is a robot with chassis and moving parts, a robot that can be programmed to do amazing things. These robots are built from DNA. We use a technique.
So I'm just leave it there. That was the last point. I just, again, just want you to consider the fact that and what people may be finding inside of whatever they're claiming they're studying, because that's the thing I can't clarify, or I can't prove that it's even actually a vial they got from Pfizer and so on. But if it is, and if that is what they're showing, the overlap is very hard to miss. So, it's hard to, with how much has been denied that we can clearly prove, we should not dismiss the possibility that this actually is something that was already deployed. I'm on the fence. Again, is it possible? 100%. Would they do it? 100%. Did it happen? I don't know. That's for you guys to decide for yourselves. Here's another article, though, to overlap this specifically with Pfizer again. This is from 2015. Pfizer to collaborate on BAR-EN DNA robots. It says Pfizer is cooperating with the DNA robot laboratory managed by Professor Ido Bachelet or Bachelet at Bar-Ilan University. Bachelet has developed a method of producing innovative DNA molecules with characteristics that can be used to, quote, program them to reach specific locations in the body and carry out pre-programmed operations there in response to stimulation from the body or outside, as I think it highlights here, and we just heard. This cooperation was revealed in a lecture by Pfizer president of Worldwide Research and Development, Portfolio Strategy and Investment Committee Chairman and Executive VP Mikhail Dolstein at the IATI Biomed Conference in Tel Aviv, being concluded today, and again, 2015. So they literally presented with the Pfizer president of Worldwide Research and Development. It says, quote, this is the CEO of Orly Tori saying, this is Pfizer's first cooperative venture with someone in Israeli higher education. The technology is fairly new for a drug company, but Pfizer has agreed to take up the challenge and support this technology in the hope that it will make a contribution to the company at the proper time. Am I the only one that feels like that's kind of ominous? And the idea that what we're talking about is 5 years later, they end up making some new experimental push that ends up kind of, especially from Moderna side of it, where they're like a failing company that finally succeeds. Either way, what's happened with it? If this is really as advanced as we're being told, why isn't it being used? I mean, they're not even talking about this. That is one of the largest things that makes me so nervous. Are we really going to pretend like in 2015, you're making the kind of advancement to where you could have 1,000 billion smart nanobots that can do medical procedures and you just didn't use that? You just were like, hey, let's make a whole new mRNA platform and see how that works out. I just don't believe that, but you guys can decide for yourselves. The medical sector in which cooperation, the medical sector in which cooperation will take place was also not disclosed. Why? But it appears that research will focus on the possibility that the robots will deliver the medical proteins to designated tissue. You know, like the spike protein. Bachelet came, or the ferritin part protein. We've talked about that too. Bachelet came to Bar-Ilan from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology several years ago. Same place that Robert Langer came up. The result is that the DNA sequence can be made in the form of a clam, for example, or other shapes, and contain a drug that can be released. In addition, the molecules can receive, or proteins like we talked about. In addition, the molecules can receive signals from each other and can theoretically change their shape according to signals from the body and can be pre-programmed to attach themselves to one another. So almost like a cancerous substance, right? Building on that. In the future, it will be possible to combine each such molecule with a miniature antenna. When the antenna receives an external signal, it will make a small change in the molecule that will make it open or close and dissipate or connect itself to another molecule. I mean, you could execute the thing that will make it dissipate and disappear. Now, interestingly, as much as this alone should be like world-shattering news for people that aren't talking about this, let's overlap this with the other topic, right? So what are we talking about here? We're talking about the idea of nanobots, which shouldn't necessarily be robot to me is an archaic term that doesn't even apply to this like biological overlap we're talking about, right? But it's what people can think about. But nonetheless, you know, we're talking about something like physical, something that's been created that is, well, I guess it's so funny. We're talking about nano-sized things. So trying to describe the difference between smart dust and nanobots is like, it's a lot smaller. But we're talking about something in this case as like a DNA robot, the way they're framing it, right? Before we even get into the smart dust overlap, what is this talking about? This conversation we've had many times. This is the Rockefeller University flipping a switch inside the head. Or the other one, the Guardian article about the ferritin, this is included in this conversation here. The deadly lipid nanoparticle spike protein design and the new mod RNA ferritin nanoparticle universal flu injection. All those are being actively worked on, if not already ready, by the U.S. government right now. This is the same conversation about ferritin and how that protein that has a bunch of iron particles in it could be used to manipulate the body. In fact, actually remote control living things. That's what this talks about. Literally remote controlling mice using a ferritin injection. And then magnetogenetics, optogenetics, and different outside influences, which is pretty damn interestingly overlap with what we were just talking about. But in this case, we're talking about just an ejection of basically nanoparticles as opposed to robots. But what's the real difference here? Could they both? I mean, they're different for sure. But at the end of the day, how do we know what we're talking about? Are we not talking about, I mean, in this case, we're talking about nanoparticles. Is that something that's already been manipulated to the point where they can call it a nanobot? It's interesting. But my point here is the overlap with what he just discussed over here. Oh, actually, I forgot. Did I read that last part? I thought there. I'm pretty sure. Hold on. Make sure I didn't. Yeah, that's weird. I guess I forgot to highlight it. Though the bottom part, it simply says, in regard to the idea we were just saying about opening and changing and releasing a drug, what it says is the robot exposes the drug to the target site according to the biological signs within the body. For example, were we to develop a product for diabetes, although that is not the purpose of this cooperation, it will be possible to develop a robot that would release insulin. The same thing they always do, like with the brain-machine interfaces, about how we can make them walk again in Parkinson's. And you know, it's always the pro. In this case, they always use the insulin discussion. We can get rid of diabetes. We can, you know, use drugs that will release this for you. Here's what's interesting. In this conversation, it's the same overlap, but in this case, they're talking about injecting ferritin nanoparticles, which then could create the illusion that your body responds to something based on the impulses that are being fed from the outside source, which also happens to overlap with the idea of insulin. Now it says once the virus, in this case, what they're talking about is an engineered virus that is utilizing ferritin nanoparticles. That's the injection. And it says once the virus had enough time to infect and transform the target neurons, this is 2017, the researchers switched on a radio transmitter. That's radio genetics, I think is what you call that. If I'm remind me in the chat, if that's the wrong term for that. There's the radio, the light, and then magnetics. And it says, time to infect and transform the target neurons. The researcher switched on a radio transmitter tuned to specifically 465 kilohertz, a little below the band used for AM radio. That's weirdly ominous. And it says the neurons responded. They began to fire, signaling a shortage of glucose, even though the animal's blood sugar levels were normal. The other part of the body responded just as they would to a real drop in blood sugar. Insulin levels actually fell. The liver started pumping out more glucose, and the animal started eating more. In effect, it says, quote, we created a perceptual illusion that the animal had low blood glucose, even though the levels were normal. But that didn't stop the body from actually producing more glucose. And the bottom line is that can be done either way. You could literally kill somebody with that from an outside signal that you would never be able to identify. And so that is interesting because now we're talking about something you're injecting, right? Where's the line there between whether we're talking about nanotech and a modified virus, especially as we get into things like the lipid nanotech and what we're finding about the things that might be in these injections? Like, I'm starting to see that this line might be more blurred than we realize. And it might be the same conversation that we're just talking about, the idea of this same kind of overlap stemming back to Pfizer, which works on the injections we're talking about, that works with the same people along this conversation. This very conversation with Rockefeller University and everything they're working on ties into the other conversations we've had, back to people like Charles Lieber and Robert Langer. But before we get to that, again, I'll play just this opening clip again. The reality that this is something that's been going on for a very long time. This is a 9-year-old video that's highlighting a 10-year-old project called the MuChip or DARPA Smart Dust. So almost 20 years ago, they had things like this. 2015, 1,000 billion in one syringe. And yet this is all still fake news.
You can literally scatter this stuff like dust or embed it into a sheet of paper. This was commercially released 10 years ago. It's a tiny computer and it features data processing, data storage, wireless comms, and it's probably as close to the true smart dust vision from the early DARPA days as we've come so far. They're designed to harvest energy from the environment around them and to communicate via a mesh network.
That was 20 years ago. And realize that was done at that time. So how long have they been testing and working on that? I did an entire show about the reality of smart dust. I'll show you the link in a minute. That goes back decades. Literally decades, where a company, I believe, was called Smart Networks or Dust Networks. It was openly talking about contracts with the government and testing these things with shipping networks. So how in the world is this not basically ubiquitous, like glyphosate? Maybe there's an overlap there. Pretty alarming to me. Now, again, the point is that Charles Lieber, who is directly connected with Robert Langer, who is, as Whitney called it, the coronavirus common denominator, who is directly tied to Charles Lieber and all the same work, all the overlap. Remember, Bob Langer is the co-founder of Moderna. He's the academic co-founder of Moderna, which utilized all of this to create what we're told is the COVID injection, or maybe it was something else going on there. And here the point is, this is what I wrote in, or did the show in 2023, May 1st, the Charles Lieber connection from nanotechnology to COVID-19 to technocracy. So here he is in 2011 working on a virus-sized transistor. And the main point we always show in this is that he says very clearly, but he says this whole thing was important because it explained and showed that when man-made structures like a nanobot is as small as a virus or bacteria, it can behave the way biological structures do. Why wouldn't we ask whether that is exactly what we're dealing with? Here is a Nature study, nature.com, featuring Charles Lieber as one of the authors from 2015 called Syringe Injectable Electronics. He's working on, and shout out to the bee lady. Jesus Christ, I'm so bad with the last... I'm so mad at myself for forgetting people's names when... Anyway, she shared this with me as the point. And the other one we talked about, they go all the way up into 2023 and 2024. That Charles Lieber has maintained this work all through the time when he was supposed to be investigated for treason, never stopped working somehow with Chinese counterparts using U.S. money, even though apparently we're told the U.S. government was investigating for treason. That makes sense, doesn't it? Or not? The point is, this is very clearly something that has been going on and goes back to all of these same people and ties, and all of this completely. Miriam, thank you. Check out her work. She does good work. All of this completely dovetails into the COVID-19 conversation. I don't even know how anybody could miss that. Now, here is the Pfizer release, the press release from 2015, as I showed you earlier. Pfizer's working with that university and specifically that research, the medical researcher, to evaluate drug delivery via nanorobots. Drug delivery. It says the agreement is focused on gaining a better understanding into DNA nanobots as potential carriers of different proteins for possible new treatments, which is exactly what we're told this thing is using lipid nanoparticles, delivering mRNA instructions to give you the spike protein, or maybe more than that. The terms of the agreement were not disclosed, of course. But let's just even say that what if the mRNA overlap and all the stuff? Remember, this is modified RNA. It was N1 methyl pseudouridine modified RNA encapsulated in lipid nanoparticles. Like, what if this is all just an abstract way of saying this is a virus-sized transistor kind of conversation? And all of this is amounting to the same point. Just hypotheticals thrown out there for you to think about. Now, it says nanorobots turn from science fiction to applied solutions. Humanity has not succeeded, it says, yet in developing a machine that can communicate directly with biological structures, biological processes, and affect it by doing so. That's the doctor we're talking about right here. He's the one that just said that in 2015 to Pfizer, even though we can literally prove to you that's not true. Right? I mean, we've shown you going back a long time that there's very clear community. You can show biological, you could show nanotechnology or smart dust going back decades that has very clearly been used to communicate directly with biological structures. Just like they hold up a big microchip and say, this is the newest thing. Not even close. And here's the best way to frame this. This is 2015 where they're acting like this has never happened before. So right now in 2024, you're getting new things coming out going, this has never happened before. This new geoengineering experiment, this new nanotech. Why do they keep acting like it's never happened and it's brand new? Because there's something very dark going on here, in my opinion. Here is an article from Times of Israel from 2021. Pfizer exec calls Israel a sort of laboratory for COVID vaccines. So isn't it interesting now that you can see that this stems back to it being funded by Israel with Pfizer, or funded by Pfizer going through Israeli research? And during all of the time when they actually rolled out this dangerous experimental injection, it turned out that Israel was the one that went solely, basically allowed Pfizer, the one group that's funding this, in this case we're talking about today, to bake their population the experiment. And he openly said this. He said in an interview, he said, well, we wanted to find out what would happen if they gave it to somebody with, I think he even said diabetes, by the way, or something like this. And so we rolled it out. Like literally telling you your population was used as test subjects. Doesn't that seem interesting when it seems that they're the group that funded this? Like, if this is connected the way it seems, that is very important, I think. Now, overall, all the way to 2024 in January, we used the image here again, adapted with these other ones below, and simply did the show, which was entitled, Is Smart Dust Already in Use on the Population? And was COVID-19, whatever that was, an attempted experimental next step? Very real question. And I'm leaning towards yes, quite frankly. And we talked about this in January as well. The Internet of Bio Nano Things is upon us. And this is utilizing the nanotech we just highlighted, but the mesh network we discussed. And this idea of the nano network between these devices, or really your body in which they're circulating, connected with IP addresses, with computers, which can be influenced from outside sources. And, you know, this is where we are. It's not tomorrow. It's happening. In fact, it's probably been going on for a long time. Just pointed out this one in general, and then this one as well, which highlights the protein overlap. In fact, we were just discussing this point about a virus that's been engineered to produce ferritin nanoparticles that then can be used to manipulate you, the way you think, the way you feel. We've even gone over the neuroscience aspect of this, where it's a Giordano, I think, the U.S. scientist working for NATO and the Department of Defense, who literally tells you that this is happening, that they are doing this, and they're not just trying to control the way you move, but the way you think and the way you feel. Now, of course, he could be lying, but it's kind of hard not to see that this is very real if everything we're being shown is correct. So when this article is discussing gain-of-function's newest brain virus, this was a new one, by the way, not the one in 2017, and genetically engineered proteins to control everything. Now, in general, to end on this, this was from, it says one day ago. That's not right. I have to refresh it. This was from 3 days ago. The EPA issues first ever regulations for forever chemicals in drinking water. Well, first of all, that made me like, oh, good, right? Well, first of all, they've known about PFAS forever. No pun intended. I mean, this has been something that has been circulating for so damn long. And don't forget, even the State Department sort of came out right as this started being focused on since, I guess, East Palestine forward. And they just kind of were like, oh, well, we need it, though, because, you know, it's a byproduct of what we need for the military. It's essentially their argument. Oh, so you do know about it and you don't care. Got it. Now you just pretend you don't know about it. Now today, oh, finally, we care. Regulations. All that proves to you is that the EPA has not cared this whole time until suddenly their job is up to stay, or that we see that they're knowing and not doing. These people are not on your side, guys. I mean, EPA is the reason East Palestine did not get solved. One of them, anyway. They are the reason, in any number of examples, we can show you that things are like why glyphosate is literally everywhere, why dioxins nobody cares about, even though it's the most dangerous thing we're dealing with. They know about all this, and I've proven it. Now, as a body, doesn't mean everybody individually involved is bad, but clearly, from a top-down, my point in bringing this up, anyways, before I get dragged into that conversation, why do they want to regulate the water? Why, like, they don't care about this, clearly, or they would have done something 30 years ago, or 5 years ago, or a year ago. Right? They don't care. So why now do they care, or pretend to, for your drinking water? Well, just as an interesting possible overlap, let's realize that what we're talking about, where it's nanobots or smart dust, there is an overlap to that that does possibly include things like graphene oxide or graphene or carbon. Now, to be clear, it doesn't have to, not and doesn't always. Well, it's interesting. 2014. Should we worry about graphene oxide in our water? This is the IEEE spectrum. It says, a new tool for measuring environmental impact will help keep the EPA on track with graphene. Now, look, this is a conversation that's been large. It's weird to me how prominent this was, whether it was for vaccine. And I'll show you some clips or some studies in a second about vaccines or tracking, or, I mean, any number of things, self-assembling nanobots and it's yet when it came out as a possibility, it wasn't dismissed as, no, that's definitely not in there, which some it was, and it is today, that's the focal point. But remember how it was first regarded? Just hair on fire, ridiculous fake news. Like, that's just so stupid. You guys, there's no such thing. Like, it's not even real. They've never do that. Except we pulled up like 14 studies that showed you from 2019, 2020, that this was the next thing. The graphene as injections and delivering drugs was the new big thing. So it doesn't mean that they used it, but why would it then be regarded as so ridiculous we can't even talk about it? That, and then you get people in the, what I argue are the mainstream alternative media, that come out and go 90%. And then everyone's, including us, we're more resistant to it. Right. But the point is, that's a very real conversation to be had here. Now, the reason I bring it up for this point is there's a huge conversation about using graphene oxide carbon overlay for tracking environmental stuff. For like in the reason this is being discussed is things in the water, like literally putting this in your water in order to track different levels. And that is crazy to me, whether or not you think it's going to be good to track certain things. So here's an interesting post from 2022. Now, it doesn't maybe not be exactly overlap, but I find it interesting in the same conversation. It says carbon is going to be very close to a currency. Tokenizing nature is next. That's from COP27. Let's just play the clip. And this was shared by Tim Hinchcliffe. I never said his name out loud. We follow each other. I like his work. But so this is a little breakdown here. And here's the actual, that's the actual article where he's talking about the tokenization of nature. And you'll see what I mean. Whether it's the aspect we've already seen or something far more alarming in regard to the utilization of these things inside natural resources. Listen to what he says.
So central banks are also starting to understand nature has real value. Carbon, we already figured out. And carbon is moving very quickly into a system where it's going to be very close to a currency.
And you could talk about that as like just tracking carbon, right? Like in the idea that we talk about carbon tax and so on. But you could also argue that there are other aspects to this. Just consider the idea that in general, first of all, we're just simply talking about the idea of banks and power, rich people, governments, like betting essentially on whether or not certain the natural processes will go a certain way. And look, you know how it works with the stock market. There's an entire industries that are wildly wealthy because they short thing, because they manufacture failures and then short things, right? So why wouldn't that happen with nature? Why wouldn't it become the idea that they literally go the negative direction and make money? The bottom line is anytime you tokenize like this or make it be, it's like you make it a game, the gamification of real life, it's a bad step. It is a dangerous step that will only hurt people.
Basically being able to take a ton of absorbed or sequestered carbon and being able to create a forward pricing curve with financial service architecture documentation. I just came out of a meeting this morning how we're trying to accelerate that. To be quite honest, not to get very boring, but we're on financial topics and things, but they're going to be derivatives, and you need ISDA documentation if you want to trade a derivative in the marketplace. And all of this actually matters for nature as well. I'm going to quickly hand off, but again, I want to talk about value one more time, because the southern part of the world has value far greater than large elements of the northern part. And when we start thinking about and putting prices on water, on trees, on biodiversity, we find where does that sit? I'm doing a lot of work out of Asia, and I say that my next door neighbor, Indonesia, is the left lung of the world, and obviously Brazil is the right. And Africa, absolutely critical. And we need their natural capital as a system-based world more than we need that $66 billion we've got sitting in the basement of the Bank of England. So how do we, and I'm hoping this discussion today, at least from a central banker's point of view, on how do we start tokenizing? How do we start building systems that actually create not only the value, but transfer that value around the world?
Doesn't that sound crazy? Like, it's like dehumanizing. Like, the idea that now, like, their resources are... Why do you think you have any say or influence over the resources of Africa? Which is clearly how they engage with the world, right? They clearly see themselves as some kind of stewards of everybody else's resources or value because they just don't know how to live the right life or whatever they view it as. Now, that's, of course, just simply talking about the gamification, the tokenization of the carbon usage and how that applies to all sorts of things. But then you can overlap that with how exactly do you track those things, right? I mean, there's plenty of ways you could talk about, but this is where we get into these kind of actual conversations. Like there's very real discussions about utilization of graphene oxide or other things in a way to track. And you know, this overlaps that conversation. But either way, going back to the health point of it, this is something that's been around for a long time. This is from 2019. Graphene-based sensors for human health monitoring. right? Well, here's another one. Graphene oxide as a multifunctional platform for intracellular delivery, imaging, and cancer sensing, 2019. Here's 2021, a novel graphene quantum dot-based mRNA delivery platform. So all you can, my point is that all of this very clearly intersects. And we can see that the 2021 discussion of an mRNA platform, which nobody even heard of at that point in regard to most people, is now this new breaking story of this new, you know, Moderna, Bob Langer, all of these overlaps. Like, I think there's a very clear connection to all of this. Now, the last part to finish with is the idea that there, well, as we bring it back to the health conversation, guess what, guys? Turns out we just fact-checked ourselves and nothing's wrong with the injections. You're all crazy, right? NBC News, there's no evidence. Think about saying that. No evidence, not proof, but evidence, meaning every single thing we've seen doesn't exist. All of the connections, all of the studies, every one of those are evidence. Every single data point that shows you that there is an issue. Or how about just the studies they've admitted to? Well, it clearly causes myocarditis. They've admitted that. So how in the world can you say no evidence that COVID vaccines cause fatal cardiac arrest or other deadly heart problems? Just because you argue incessantly that it's not severe for every single person, that's not possible, first of all. People have died because of the myocarditis. So then, yes, it is clearly, it can cause fatal heart problems. I mean, they've admitted that, guys, and yet they come out with an entire study that says completely fake. Don't mind the man behind the curtain. We'll just redirect everything to just completely fake. Shut up. You're all wrong. Move forward. Take your shots. Nobody believes that. That's a CDC report. Why? I mean, like anybody actually trusts the CDC at this point. The new analyst debunks widespread misinformation. It's just tired. It's not, I mean, take the time. If you want to go through this, it's exactly what you might expect. The reality is, we've done our own research. As I wrote, the best way to think about it. We've investigated ourselves and we found ourselves not guilty. It does seem to be the push of the week, doesn't it? Why would anybody let the accused investigate themselves, a la Israel or any other conversation we're talking about? It's pathetically obvious. One of the most deadly things that I've, in regard to a medical treatment that I've ever seen in my life, possibly the history of the world. I don't even know why I would say possibly, for crying out loud. How is it even possible that this isn't the biggest medical malpractice, failure, direct harm that we've ever seen? And yet they have the gall to come out with a study that goes, it's all fake. No one's been harmed. Everything's good. You're all crazy. Go back to sleep. Unbelievable. And as Danica said, the CDC investigates itself, says the genetic sludge the CDC profits from and forced everyone to take is not responsible for the sudden rise in excess death, which just so happens to be Sigma level since the sludge was rolled out. But just a fake coincidence. Don't follow. Right. And then she highlights this. This is perfect. The CIA says it has found no link between itself and the crack trade, except we all know that was a lie. And it turned out they were. Like every other story we've ever heard about the government, right? I mean, it's just sad that people still pretend like this is not the way to err. Err on the side of they're probably lying to you. Err on the side of what's happening right now is probably manufactured to some degree, whether we're talking about Iran firing drone, whatever. You have to be skeptical about what they're telling you when they tell you something, when it's very clearly in their self-interest. Doesn't mean deny it, but be skeptical. Here is a great clip. Japanese professor delivers stunning message everyone needs to hear. The pandemic was used as a false pretext by the WHO to drive vaccinations of all people in the world. That's what he says. This is a PhD, Professor Masayasu Inu. I'm probably mispronouncing that. Professor Emeritus of Osaka City University Medical School. Here's what he had to say.
Specialty is molecular pathology and medicine. The pandemic.
Molecular pathology was the focus of Arne Burkhardt, right? And this is, again, I highly recommend the interview with Taylor Hudak. It's almost a year since the recordings were done. It took us a long time to finally get that done and get it out. But nonetheless, it's very important. And the idea of that pathology, what it proves, is undeniable. Undeniable. And here's another expert coming out and telling you that you've been lied to.
Pandemic was used as a false pretext by the WHO to drive vaccinations of all peoples in the world. A plan was set up to shorten the time to develop vaccines, which usually takes longer than 10 years, to less than 1 year, Operation Warp Speed. This operation was used to cover up the misconcept of the genetic vaccines under the pretext of saving time. An extremely dangerous method was selected, that is, intramuscular injection of viral genes to produce toxic spike proteins directly in human tissues to stimulate immune system. Because this is a completely new method and misconcept method that has never applied before in human history, it is impossible, therefore, for most of doctors to give proper informed consent. However, due to irresponsible government and media campaigns to promote vaccines, 80% of the Japanese has been vaccinated, unfortunately. Seven shots have been done so far. This is the most and worst in the world, and the result was the induction of the terrible drug-induced injury that has never seen in human history. I believe that the fraudulent use of experimental gene therapy to healthy people, particularly to healthy children, is an extreme violation of human rights.
No, I'll leave it there. I'm sure it's very difficult for the podcast to make out some of what he's saying, but there the subtitles are on there as well for you if you watch the clip on the actual video. I mean, just it's another expert who's coming out and telling you, finding the courage to come out and tell you what he thinks here, right? And all he's simply telling you is that they lied to you, and this was a catastrophic mistake, or I argue a crime. And now I'll include this as well, and interestingly, specifically the Moderna vaccine or injection. This is from August 2021 from the BBC. Japan finds black particles in Moderna vaccine. Moderna being the co-founder, being Robert Langer. I just find that to be an interesting overlap. Now, to end in general, I also wanted to include this before we wrap up and I try to restart the next show. Edward Snowden said this on the 12th. A vote for warrantless searches of your internet activity, FISA 702, is happening this morning. I just can't even fathom why anybody thinks, like, it's crazy to me that this can be such a huge conversation. This can be this. Everybody was talking about the FBI and FISA warrants, how frivolous they were and how nobody checked. And now it's just going forward. You know, it shows you guys that there is no two parties. It's always your government utilizing the dynamic and the division to keep you thinking like somebody cares and just jamming things right back down your throat because nobody wants to acknowledge that everyone is doing the same thing. And this is what's happening, right? This, as I wrote, the fact that this is even happening shows just how little, none at all, in fact, our representatives care about our opinions. Thomas Massie wrote this. This is on 12th as well. This is how the Constitution dies. By a tie vote, the amendment that would have required a warrant to spy on Americans goes down in flames. Why? Because the speaker was the tiebreaker and voted against warrants to spy on Americans. Now, yes, 212 voted against it. That's important to recognize. I don't always think that means that they care, but important to recognize who voted what we would see as the right way. But recognize, guys, that there was a hell of a lot of Republicans that voted for this. For those out there thinking that, you know, the one side versus the other tie dynamic, for me, it's all the government. But realizing that not only did they all vote for this, but the House Speaker broke the tie in favor publicly as the one vote for, yes, we don't need warrants. Like, how is that not like treasonous? You're literally going, Constitution be damned. We want to be able to know what you're saying on the phone, which, by the way, they do anyway. You think they need a warrant to spy on you? Like, this is the lie we tell ourselves bigger than anything. They don't need these, but this is about trying to enshrine into law, like Ron Paul always talks about, the idea of the Patriot Act, the War Powers Act, where all they really did was just enshrine that the thing they're not supposed to do is now legal, acting like that solves the problem. Well, it does for them, doesn't it? But this is where it's going. Now, here's a clip from, well, what's fun, it's a clip from Lauren Boebert, but this, well, let me play it first, then I'll read you what Representative Jason Crow actually said. If you already read it, I'll say it again, but for the podcast, you're going to wait to hear this. This is a member of Congress that literally tells you everything. I mean, it challenges what we're told or what we can prove. There's no one spying on you. There's no deep state. There's nothing like that. Well, let's listen to what she had to say first in regard to what the next step will be. This was also the 12th after that tie-breaking vote. And apparently it looks like there might be another opportunity. Here's what she has to say.
After 86 Republicans betrayed you, the American people, today, saying that the federal government does not need a warrant to start a query or illegally spy on you or tap your phones or whatever they want to do. Well, my girl, Congresswoman Ana Paulina Luna of Florida, forced a procedural vote on the overall bill for FISA. And now that bill cannot be sent to the Senate until we take another vote on the warrant amendment for FISA on Monday. That means we need you, the American people, putting pressure on these 86 Republicans who sold.
Or how about just all of our government? I'm so sick and tired. Like, her message is correct, right? We shouldn't want this. I'm glad we're getting another vote. But it always finds itself back into the partisan one-sided dynamic, which is guaranteed to not change anything. Why wouldn't you say petition your government? Why are you pretending like you're only talking to Republicans? Because we live in this ridiculously juvenile world in this country where you ignore everything on the other side. How do we think that's logical? For crying out loud, recognize that not just 86, everyone that voted for this violated your rights. Everyone that voted for this, left or right, or just your government, doesn't care about your rights. But that being said, I agree ultimately what you're saying, but it kills me that we can't get away from this tribalist nonsense, which, by the way, I mean, tribalism is what we come from. It's not like that is where things end up resolving to when people are left to their own devices. People will collect how they want to. My point is that within politics, the idea that we pretend like that exists is a game. They're using the way you perceive. They're using your divide. They're dividing and conquering. It's as simple as that. And you know what? You guys all know this. Everyone in the chat knows this. But hopefully reach one more person here.
Hold you out today all weekend long. Do not relent. We have your back here in Washington, D.C. But this weekend, we need you doing your part and making sure that your voice, we the people, are heard on this. Do not relent. Don't let up. Don't draw back. Now is the time to press in. We are winning.
Here is what he said in response to this. Because she said uniparty, right? Which again, I agree. But what she's actually saying is the uniparty and then us patriots, which are still Republicans, though. So that's not you're literally just recreating the two-party illusion when you do that, though. That's what's so ridiculous about it to me. But in any case, he says there is no uniparty. Well, yeah, there very clearly is. There's one government. That's what it really is. And they always act in unison when it comes to war, Israel, and a number of very clear primary objectives for your government. He says there is no deep state. I mean, really, man? Like, at this point in the world, you think you can... I mean, it's just embarrassing. Like, whether we're talking about the continuity of government discussion from Reagan forward, which is exactly what that was, and how it continued forward, and it was really before that as well, but this is a very clear example of, like, a shadow government creation. But the deep state is bigger than that. It's about unelected power structures that control things. How do we not see that as literally everything we talk about? And I'm not even talking about things we can prove, like these building world government concepts. I'm talking about things like powerful corporations, families, intelligence, things that we don't even talk about or recognize, complete shadowy entities that we don't even know exist. He knows all that's real. We can prove all that is real. And he just goes, oh, there's no deep state. Go back to sleep. Don't mind the man behind the curtain. This guy is a manipulator or really too stupid to know he's wrong. And that's scary. But it says there is no spying on millions of Americans. Can you believe that? So this might, I find it impossible to believe that anybody, let alone in Congress, would not be aware of Clapper? I believe it was Clapper admitting in Congress, right? Or rather lying about it and then being caught for lying about it in front of Congress, that yes, the NSA, as we all know, is spying on Americans. And very clearly right now, you are voting to be able to spy on Americans with no warrant. And you write there's no spying. These are people in power. It's just mindless, but yet people that are on his side politically will pretend he's right for whatever reason or ignore it because we don't want to be embarrassed, because that's what the two-party paradigm does. It creates ignorance and it ruins logic. But it says federal courts have repeatedly found no Fourth Amendment issue. Oh, I see. So the government investigated itself and found itself not guilty. Got it. Then it says there is a critical NatSec program, so please learn about it. Right, so except there is a thing we're going to do and it's important for us. That's why it's not any of those things you said, even though it is all those things we just said. Typical government for you. Lastly, Ford Fisher points something out I just wanted you not to miss, which shows you the point I'm including all of these for, is that all of this, whether it's the FISA warrants or the fact that your government's literally setting you up in every way that it can, these are the same people that are working on the nanotechnology, the injections they're giving you, whatever other things they're working on for your, you know, your best interest, which has nothing to do with your best interest. These are the same entities, the same government people, the same ones that are allowing genocide in Israel. These are the same people. Just hope, I want you to recognize that. Ford Fisher writes, breaking, well, first of all, this was the one on April 1st. The Virginia Kikoas, a pro-gun prepper militia based in Eastern Virginia and formerly affiliated with the Boogaloo movement, tells the news to share his group that they recently kicked out a member that they believe may have been plotting an explosives-related entrapment attempt against their group. So basically somebody that in the FBI or some organization that has worked their way into the group and is now trying to convince them to carry out some kind of bombing attack that, you know, in order to entrap them, which is, we know that's literally, that's like 90% of what the FBI seems to do today. I just shouldn't say that. Not literally. The point is a lot. I don't know how I could possibly know it's 90%, but realize it is clearly a common thread for them to set you up and then arrest you for things that they convinced you to do, or worse than that. But it says, Russell Richardson, Vane the fourth, first made contact with this group. Cut to the chase, the bottom line is, they kicked him out. It goes over their names and so on. And so the point is, they got rid of this guy. They kicked him out of the group. They spoke with him and said, look, you know, this guy was trying to set us up. It was clearly an attempt to entrap us. That's what they said. Here's what's crazy about this. That was the end of the story on the first. Jump forward to the 11th, or he posted this specifically on the 12th. Apparently, that person, the subject of his reporting, who allegedly attempted to provoke them into doing a thing that they didn't want to do, was arrested. This is what always happens. He's charged with attempted production of a biological agent or toxin. I'm willing to bet you that this is probably someone that's even on their team. This is probably something about, like, one or two ways this works. Because clearly, it seems very obvious this guy was being used as it's, I mean, how do you deny it now? They came out, they kicked him out, and then after the fact, they arrest him for what? He's not even in the group anymore. So it's either somebody who they tricked and is now taking, being thrown under the bus, like the child, like this story right here. This is 2018, Matt Agarist, parents catch FBI in a plot to force mentally ill son to be a right-wing terrorist. And if you think that's hyperbolic, read it. I mean, it's crazy. And this comes from multiple studies, corporate media. The kid was mentally challenged. He lived with his parents. He didn't have a car. He didn't have anything. They literally gave him everything. The kid just wanted a friend. That's really how this worked out. He was trying to say whatever they wanted him to say so he would make a friend. And luckily, his parents stepped in. Then they found out and they blew the whistle. And it was a huge story. Of course, most people don't even know about it because they're not supposed to. But the point is, clearly this guy was either that kind of a setup where, because they didn't get the bigger group, they just go, well, arrest him then. Even though he didn't do anything. It didn't happen. Attempted production, not even attempted use, attempted production of a biological agent. Or it is somebody on their team and they're just trying to make this process happen so they can then try to rope in rest of the people. This is what your government does. Meanwhile, they're committing genocide around the world. They're bombing innocent people. They're starving people, raping them of their resources. And they're also trying to frame you and acting like, we did a good job. Look at us stopping crime. That does not mean there's not good people in some of these positions or that some people out there are actually stopping crime. It's the reality of the larger problem that we're dealing with. This is who they are. So we're going to leave it there for the day. Or I'm going to jump off and set up the show for the conversation of foreign policy. I think it's important that we cover this as well. So stay tuned. It might take a little bit longer than you might expect, but I'm going to get to it tonight. So I'll see you in a minute. Thank you for tuning in tonight, guys. I think all of this nanotechnology direction, I know I stress this very often. It's something that I really think we, even myself, we're not giving enough coverage to. We're not talking about enough. And I haven't even been before the Israel conversation, really October 7th forward. It is wildly prominent. I see it intersecting and dovetailing with everything, medical and otherwise. And it concerns me how little coverage it gets. So just make sure we get this information out there, break these parts out, clip them up. You know, I mean, right now I've got both Brock and Jason making clips of stuff. So that will be out there as well. I saw someone in the chat asking about smaller clips. We already do this, not everything, but we do our best to put out some smaller clips. Even today, again, you know, this was exactly why I had to break this in half, because there's just so much going on that I do want to cover. And I find it difficult not to get into these things. I feel like I'm letting somebody down. And I know that's just on me. That's, I'm doing that to myself. But it's, sometimes I feel like I don't see anybody else covering stuff that I think it needs to be covered a certain way. So thank you for your support. Again, we'll have the links down below for our Give, Send, Go. I want to continue to kind of shout that out because it's kind of been stagnated because I haven't been pointing at it. But the point is I want to try to continue to get the recurring donations up to a monthly amount. So we're only about like 150 that is like on a monthly recurring as it looks right now. I'm sure it'll populate more throughout the month. But if you want to support us, that's a good place to do it, as well as anywhere else we have our Substack or Give, Send, Go, or you know, Subscribestar and everything else. We need your support. Thank you for being here, as always. I love you all. Question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.
All gene-based vaccines, independent of manufacturers, produce the same result in the vaccinees. He has looked at 15. In the last 4 days, the number has been increased to 70 individuals who died after vaccination. These were people who died at home, at work, in the car, doing their sports, etc., etc., etc. There's no question now anymore about what is going on. And the answer is in the organs of these people. In 90%, he found clear evidence for autoimmune self-attack by killer lymphocytes on the tissues.